segment. It's the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour. That's how we're starting. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour, brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group's Bills Wire. I am your host, Kyle Selagi, and today we have the full crew back, the OG crew. I'll introduce them in a few seconds here, but for today's topics, as far as topics are concerned, we have the Bills training camp rundown. Training camp started last week on Thursday. And there's a few storylines, enough to fill up A through L of the alphabet, according to my podcast rundown here. And then if we have time, if we're not pushing an hour by the time we're done with this, we will talk about Jadeveon Clowney. There was some Jadeveon Clowney news came out this week, or a few rumors that surfaced. So if we have time, we'll touch on those toward the end of the podcast. But the main focus today is going to be training camp, and joining me to talk about training camp is Justin DeLauro. D'Lo, how are you?
It's great to be back. I'm glad that we're all reunited.
Reunited, and it feels so good.
There it is.
Someone had to say it, and I'm glad it was me. And then we have making his return after a one-week assignment. It's Rich Kowalski. Rich, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. How's it going, guys?
Oh, it's doing well. It's almost like we didn't just have a 5-minute delay.
It is almost there like too. That, you know.
Fantastic.
But I'm glad that we got it all figured out, or you got it all figured out.
Thank you. Thank you for taking credit. But, yes.
Yep. I fixed the technical issues. Yeah. I figured it all out.
Our engineers, hats off.
Our engineers here at the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour, we figured it all out. So we'll get into training camp here in a second. But first, something came to my attention today, and I just have to talk about it. I have to bring it up. So I went to Germany last year. I absolutely loved it. I loved the food, the beers, the architecture. It was all great. Everything was fantastic. Besides one thing, it wasn't in Buffalo. So today I learned that there is a German microbrewery opening downtown called Hofbräuhaus.
It's pronounced Hofbräuhaus.
Hofbräuhaus, Rich.
I bet.
There's definitely a Y in there.
There's a U with the two dots above it. There's
Hofbräu. Oh yeah,
Hofbräu.
I don't even know what that's called.
But guys, it looks like a traditional German place. This looks like everything I've ever wanted in a bar in one place.
I can tell you from experience, it's fun the first few times going there. But okay. After that, it feels like a novelty. It feels like, you know, one of those tourist traps. They have the accordion going and the big German band, and
awesome.
It's great, but prices are not going to be Buffalo prices, if you know what I mean. You're going to get
big,
I don't like that.
You're going to get some complaints about the prices, I guarantee it. You're going to be paying for a big Stein of beer. It's going to be about, I don't know, $15 or so for that.
That's with tip, right?
That's without tip. And then you know, you can get some sausage samplers or
some currywurst,
some sherry. You can get paddled there as well. You know, get a shot of sherry, they offer you the option if you want to get paddled. I've not obliged yet, so I don't know from experience.
Well, like I called my friend today who went to Germany with me last year. And he's like, I'm going to be there every night. And I was like, so am I. This is the new spot. If this is everything it's advertised as, it's going to be fantastic. Mm. We floated the idea of having a Bills Wire meetup in the Slack recently. Mm. I sound like Cover One in the exclusive Slack. But we've talked about the idea of having a meetup. And if you're listening to this Breaking the fourth wall, if you're listening to this and you would like us to have a meetup, if you'd like to meet up with us anywhere, the royal you, the listeners, if you would want to meet up with us and if you'd be interested in a meetup, let us know and we'll set something up. But if we ever do have a Kyle Selagi Variety Hour meetup, it will be at Hofbräuhaus.
It'll be
on Scotch Street.
Okay.
Well, there definitely won't be an opportunity to host a podcast at that place because it'll be loud the entire time.
No.
So that is definitely off the table. So if you're interested in that, don't go there to host a podcast.
The meetup is just going to be, I'm going to be there most every
night. Go there for fisticuffs with Kyle Salagi over his most recent piece you don't agree with.
Exactly. If you don't agree with my stuff, I'm probably going to be at Hofbrauhaus. So you can just
take it
know,
up with our editor, to... Nick Wotan. He'd love to.
Yes. He will not be at Hofbrauhaus. He'll be in New York. What's like the preppy New York bar?
Oh,
is there?
Know.
I'm sure
there's
hundreds,
five
but
there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's called Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's called. Yeah, it's called Brooklyn. It's pretty bougie now in some parts.
It's all bougie, but so yeah, Hofbrauhaus, guys. I just learned about it. Apparently, it's been talked about for like five years.
It
but
has been.
Same
yes.
thing happened
yeah,
in St.
I,
Petersburg. They talked about it for like 5 years, and it took forever to make. And then you go there, and you're like, yeah, it's all right.
This is like Bass Pro Shop, but it's actually happening, and it's actually going to be
cool. One
cool
thing about it, you can get your own Stein and leave it there for, you know, frequent people, like, you know, people that go there all the time, like Kyle Salagi. They'll be able to get their own Stein. They lock it up, they put it in, you know, on a nice shelf, and you can go back, and
dude,
it doesn't smell like
This is music to my ears right now. How much is that, do you think?
Too much. It's got to be at least $50.
Oh,
this
no.
This is what I mean. This is the place where you get things that are overpriced. You have a great time. You pay for the experience is what you're doing. It's like going to Oktoberfest.
Exactly.
You're paying for the experience. The beer isn't like, I mean, it's great beer, but it's not worth that much money, like $15 for a stein of it.
I'm happy. I'm looking forward to this. I'll pay $50. I don't care.
Oh, my.
I'll do it, man. I'm feeling crazy. Get enough Hefeweizens in me. I'll pay $50. But we've talked enough about Hofbräuhaus. Hofbräuhaus.
There you go.
My actual German friend's coming in September, so I'll have him on the podcast.
I wouldn't take him.
We'll
to
figure
Hofbräuhaus.
It out. He would hate it. It would
be like going to an American bar in Germany.
Exactly. But that it's going to be, hey, whatever happens, it's going to be a lot of fun. So let's dive into training camp talk here. We have, as I said at the start of the show, we have enough topics here to fill up A through L of the alphabet. I'm not good at quick maths like Big Shaq, so I can't I can't tell you what that number is. But it's A through L in the alphabet. I have that filled in points here. So I'll go to you, D'Lo. I'll go to D'Lo first to see, thus far, we're a few days into training camp, what is your, I guess, most intriguing storyline that's emerged for you that, is intriguing or interesting?
I don't know how exciting it is, but it obviously centers on Josh Allen.
Right.
And how he's kind of taking control of this offense, and he's almost becoming a larger-than-life figure right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you saw him, he stopped in the middle of you know, questioning in a drill or something, and all of a sudden started like signing an autograph and taking a picture, and it's almost like he's becoming this larger than life figure on and off the field for Buffalo, and that's kind of an intriguing thing, especially as a second year quarterback who does have a little bit to prove on the field, but you're starting to see that it seems like he's becoming one with the whole one Buffalo motto and idea. So it's interesting to see him, you know, a year later. You know, looking at a kid who last year didn't seem to be, you know, he was third string down on the depth chart. We really didn't know what we were going to see from him. Now it's like he's got a grasp of everything around him at camp. He's got a strong grasp of the offense. He's guiding things in the huddle. He's guiding things, you know, plays and directing players, obviously, on the field, teammates. So it's just interesting to see on and off the field the growth that we've had in about 365 days for Allen.
Yeah, apparently he's been just having this dynamic connection with John Brown, who they brought him in as a deep threat, and that's another point that we'll get to, but just John Brown apparently has been everything as advertised. Cole Beasley he's developed a nice rapport with in the last few days, which is reassuring to see because Cole Beasley was supposed to be his just safety valve, I guess, the guy who was going to be there as his check down guy, and it's nice to see that they are developing that relationship right now. But that's a really good point you bring up, just about him becoming this folk hero. Just in the 10 or 15 years now that I guess that I've been not covering, obviously, but following this team, I've never seen a fan base or the Bills fan base so deeply connect with a quarterback. I've seen them this deeply connect with players, Stevie Johnson, Fred Jackson, Kyle Williams. Never a quarterback, though. EJ, it was, you know, by year two, it was kind of like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if he's the guy. Maybe, but we'll see. Tyrod, nobody. I liked Tyrod. Some people like Tyrod, but there was never this just open-armed reception from the fan base besides week one of his first year where he led into a victory over Indy, I think it was. But just that was kind of the last time that the whole fan base was behind Tyrod, as Rich, you alluded to on a past podcast. Even when Tyrod took him to the playoffs, everyone was like, oh, I don't know, maybe. But Josh Allen, this is just, it's insane just how the whole fan base has just accepted him and has said, yes, this is our guy. I don't care what the national media says. I don't care what any outsiders say. This is our quarterback, and we love him. And it's kind of just weird, especially last year at this time. The fan base was divided almost. It was, I don't know. I don't know about his accuracy issues. He wasn't that dominant at a Mountain West school. So I don't know.
I mean, last year we also had people who said, just give Nathan Peterman a chance.
Exactly. Yes,
give the kid a shot.
They were divided. It was, I don't know if Josh is the guy. Let's wait and see. I'm not gonna give him the keys to the city right now. But now you've got the fan base saying yes.
Yeah.
Name City Hall after him. Make him the mayor. So it's just, that's been interesting to see, just the fan base just kind of turn, I don't want to say turn around, but more openly embrace him. So, Rich, any opinions on that?
I mean, it's nice that you see Josh Allen already checking the boxes of what you want with their franchise quarterback off the field. The way he composes himself has been fantastic, and the way he's embraced the community. I mean, for not to sound cliche, but he's done that. He's really embraced the community and embraced the fan base. After, at first, fans were kind of questionable about whether or not they wanted him or whether or not they wanted that option as their franchise quarterback, but they've really turned on to him. And it's just a matter of what he can do on the field this year, if he can progress on the field. We've seen that he is a leader, and he's been called a leader by other people on the roster, such as John Brown compared him to Carson Palmer in the huddle. You know, it's the same type of thing. It's, you have him checking all those boxes, and it's going to be interesting to see if he can really progress on the field this year with those weapons they added.
Yes, I 100% agree with all that. And sorry if you guys heard my dogs barking in the background there. It's a staple. It's either the dogs or it's the air siren,
the air raid
from the fire. Exactly. It's something every week. But hey, that's the type of quality you get here from the Kyle Selege Variety Hour. Exactly. It's some guy. It's some guy who likes German beer in his bedroom, just talking with a few buds. So, yes, Josh Allen is the... It's Raw. You guys can't see, but D'Lo just wrote in the chat, it's Raw is the new motto. It is. The Kyle Slag Variety Hour, it's Raw. That's a good selling point. So, Josh Allen, yes, we'll talk about him more later in the show, just how he's looked, I guess, just from a player perspective on the field. But it has been nice to see him embrace the fan base and to see the fan base embrace him back. But I guess my biggest takeaway thus far from training camp would be Ed Oliver. Ed Oliver, again, we said it about John Brown. He's been everything as advertised. Ed Oliver with coming in with the sky-high hopes. He had the weight of the world on his shoulders. Fans were... It's not easy for a fan base, after a player like Kyle Williams, who is your three tech, or at least your nose tackle, or your defensive tackle, your number one defender for 13 years, after he retires, for a fan base just to so quickly point to you and say, yep, you're the guy, I like you. That's rare in itself, for the fan base to just so quickly turn around and embrace one guy. But for Ed Oliver to come in and not only live up to those expectations, but exceed them, I guess a lot of people have been tweeting from training camp that he's just looked dominant. He's just been rolling past offensive linemen, no matter if he's with the second team or the first team. And he started with the second team. Sean McDermott came out and said on the first day of training camp, he has a long way to go. He has work to do. He's a rookie in this league. I think by day two, he had surpassed Jordan Phillips on the depth chart, and he was with the ones. Mm-hmm. He was lining up next to Star Lotulelei. So the hype's there. but it's not affecting him. Mm-hmm. He's still being impactful. And that's something that I think is very reassuring as we get closer to the regular season, that even with all eyes on him, he's relishing in that role. Mm-hmm. And I think he's in for a big year. I really do. So, Rich, what do you think about that?
I mean, like you said, he almost had the weight of his shoulders. The weight of the world.
Weight of his shoulders.
The weight of the world on his shoulders coming into the season, you know, filling big shoes behind Kyle Williams and even like Marcel Darius in the past. Dude, the Bills fans have a certain expectation. And I think for him, coming out of the draft, he was even being compared to someone like Aaron Donald, where mm-hmm. that adds so much pressure, and he's responded so well. He's responded with class and as a professional, and you're seeing just the tenacity he has on the field. It's going to be so fun to just see him on that defensive front, and with that defense already as stacked as it is, adding him to the mix is just going to be really fun to watch him get after quarterbacks and hopefully get some sacks on the board. Maybe stop the run or something. I don't know. Who runs in the NFL anymore, really?
No one. We've been real lovey-dovey for the Bills here on this podcast thus far.
Yeah, no, it's gotten into us.
Yeah, I don't like to do that. I like to be objective when mm-hmm. I can be, but I guess when talking about these subjects, Josh Allen, he was decent last year, and the fans embraced mm-hmm. him. Nothing subjective about that. Ed Oliver, I've been huge on Ed Oliver for years. I remember after the 2018 draft, a few days after, I wrote an article that mocked Ed Oliver to the Bills just because I liked Ed Oliver, even though it was a year before the draft. So I really think Ed Oliver, you look at Tremaine Edmonds, you look at Tre'Davious White, two guys that this front office regime have built this defense around. Mm-hmm. I think Ed Oliver, if 5 years from now, even with Tremaine, even with Tre'Davious, I think Ed Oliver is going to be the face of the defense. I really do. I think he's that dominant of a player. I think he's just going to be the type of player that that executives from around the league look at and say, we need our own Ed Oliver. We need our own player like that. Like players look at Aaron Donald now and say, executives look at Aaron Donald and say, we need our Aaron Donald. I think players are going to, I can't talk. I think executives are going to look at Ed Oliver and say, we need a player like him. So, again, sorry if we're being too lovey-dovey for the Bills here, but I guess that's what the audience wants anyway. But
Ed Oliver. Should we dial it back a little bit?
Let's dial it back a bit, D-Lo. Right. Where do you want to go?
Well, I will dial it back and be the fun sucker and say, you know what? They just put on pads.
True.
And it's early in the process. It's obviously nice to see, you know, some highlights of Allen finding Beasley and Brown and seeing mm-hmm. that looks like the offense is a little more competent and that the offensive line is starting to, you know, find their way a little bit with all the new pieces, but it's only been 4 days.
That'll
be my fun sucker thing for the day. Party it's, Cooper. It's, you know, we're lucky they even have helmets on right now. So, I mean, I love to see all the good stuff. You know, but I feel like that around the league, too. Like, when I see Odell Beckham Jr. catch that crazy ball from Baker Mayfield, I'm like, okay, that's awesome.
Like cool.
And it's really cool. And we're at training camp.
Yeah.
So, I always try and, like, temper that before I start losing my mind and being like, oh, here we go, 16-0, because, you know, it's very early on. Almost every team is at the same exact point right now, trying to refine and figure out a lot of stuff, and there's going to be a lot of good and there's going to be a lot of not so great as they kind of sift their way through this new season.
Yeah, that's a big point. We're 4 days in here. They just put on pads. I doubt they're playing full speed football yet, or I can almost guarantee they're not. It is fun just to look at these emerging storylines after 4 days and see who's taken the next step in their development and who's taken a step back, maybe, as we'll get into, or which rookies have come to play, which haven't. But again, it's been a few months. We're starved for content. Mm-hmm. All media is starved for content. They'll take anything at this point. So kind of overanalyzing the first few days of training camp where guys are just walking around, going through the motions for the most part and getting back into shape.
This guy's on a bike. He's on a bike on the sideline.
Yeah, exactly.
He's going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks.
Oh my gosh. The tweets coming out of training camp are just the best parts. It's like making these assessments about this person's career in 2 days of light practicing.
But guys, how creative is Brian Daboll?
Oh, he's creative.
How creative is Brian Daboll? He threw a screen pass to a running back.
To Frank it's Gore. Crazy. Why?
I love Matt Parrito, but that's
crazy.
Sweet.
No one tackled him even.
How creative is Brian Daboll?
Oh god.
It's great. It's just laughable sometimes when you see these people writing about the training camp going on as if this is the regular season, as if this is the Frank Gore going against the Patriots defense and he's wide open and they're making great creative plays. It's like they're playing against each other. They can't tackle each other. They're working on plays. They're trying new things. They're putting in new systems. What?
It's against the CBA to take off your teammate's head.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Brian Daboll will be – here's your hot take. Ready? We need a hot take sound or something.
I'll add one in. Yep.
It's got to be
I'll put in the air
horns. It's either trap horns or a fire siren like that, yeah.
I'll take it all. Brian Daboll will be a head coach next year if Josh Allen succeeds.
Wow.
Oh, you're right.
And does 100%. Insanely well.
Yeah,
100%. If this offense looks competent and is – you know, putting up, you know, 24 points a game, Brian Daboll is going to get phone calls left and right. And everything that he's done before Buffalo, where people question him, and, you know, Miami and Cleveland. It was Miami, right?
I think so.
I don't remember.
Miami, Cleveland, somewhere else. That'll all go by the wayside because they'll look and see what he's done with an apparently raw quarterback and turned him into, you know, made him fill out his full potential.
I mean, there were rumors last year. There was some smoke there last year about Brian Daboll potentially getting a head coaching job. I think Green Bay was the rumor, but he was linked to a few other markets. And I remember hearing Vic Carucci talk about it in the media room. He just said, it's not so much about your most recent year. It's the book you've established. And Brian Daboll he's been a model coach throughout his entire journey. You can look at, I guess, stats or whatever, but just from a interaction standpoint and just being there and being a team player, a model coach, a guy that players can go to and is good with his other coaches, owners, etc. Brian Daboll checks all the boxes as far as that is concerned. And D'Lo, as you bring up, if he turns Josh Allen, who a lot of teams, or I don't want to say a lot of teams, but a lot of critics and analysts wrote off 2 years ago saying he couldn't hit Lake Erie from the docks. He can't throw a ball, or he can throw a ball, but he can't accurately throw a ball. If he's able to turn him into a functional and good quarterback in 2 years, he'll get a head coaching job somewhere for sure. And I think he's a good offensive coordinator. I think he's creative. Last year he didn't have the weapons. I think this year, now that he has the weapons, just watch. I think this Bills offense is in for a big year. I'm too lovey-dovey again, but I do. I like Brian Daboll.
It's fine. I mean, you look at what he did with Isaiah McKenzie.
Yep.
I mean, all of a sudden, you said, who's this guy? And all of a sudden, he's out there, you know, making plays, and it's going to be good if this all turns around for the Bills.
I truly think it will. I was celebrating my friend's birthday a few weeks ago, and one of my old friends from high school asked me, what do you think the Bills are doing this year? I said, I think they're going 10-6. And he's like, really? And I was like, I think 10-6 is the record they're going to end up with this year. I don't know individual games. I know the Matt and Jeremy just did a podcast about that a few weeks ago, predicting the individual games. But I think 10-6 is a realistic outcome for this team. And I honestly think, I don't want to say if they don't make the playoffs, that will be a disappointment. But I think realistically, they are a wild card team. So we'll move on here. We said before the podcast, we don't want to go an hour, and here we are, half an hour in. So we are killing it. We will speed up the process a little bit here to get Canadian on you guys. The process.
Wow, trust the process.
Big Argos fans. So we'll talk about the wide receivers a little bit. There's been a few storylines that come out of the wide receiver room besides John Brown, who has been on the receiving end of a few Josh Allen deep balls in training camp, which is what we wanted to see. That's what fans were sold on when they signed John Brown, was he's the deep threat that Josh Allen needs in the play action offense. John Brown is the guy that will be the number one receiver, the Robert Foster, if you will. But apparently that connection's been developed. The Cole Beasley connection's been developed. But speaking of Robert Foster, he's been a little bit invisible. I was watching One Bills Live on Friday, I think, and they were saying that Robert Foster wasn't invisible, but he wasn't much better than invisible. So that's something. David Sills, the fifth of his name. he's been invisible. I've heard nothing about David Sills. And Ray McLeod is a player that has emerged over the offseason. Brian Daboll said, I guess unprompted, he just brought him up in a press conference that, yeah, Ray McLeod has really taken strides here in his second year. So, Rich, just from the wide receiver position, what are your takeaways thus far?
I mean, it's great to see that Josh Allen and John Brown have developed that relationship early, and they're starting to really get on the same page, because John Brown could be such a huge part of Allen's game with that strong arm, being able to throw it downfield and test the defense. You have a guy that has been in the league a few years. Robert Foster, I mean, last year coming in as an undrafted free agent, we saw what he could do with Allen just being in the league for barely that, you know, not even a year at that point. And adding someone that has seen defenses and can kind of know what to expect, adding that to the deep game is huge for Allen's progression. Then you add Cole Beasley, too, and Cole Beasley has been fantastic already developing with Allen as well. And he's off of social media, so that won't be a distraction any games this year, hopefully. he might come back, you never know. But, yeah, it's been fantastic to see those two develop and become Allen's real strong parts of the receiving game potentially this year. They spent money on those positions. You kind of maybe scratched your head at the contract lengths for both of those guys being their age. But it looks like it's been so far a calculated decision by Bean to add those two guys into the mix and really play it out. And they have so many different potential options out there. It's the Bills and Bean are in such a good position. It's going to be more difficult to make the cuts, you know, come it's time to go down the 53-man roster in the last few weeks before the season. It's going to be tough for them because they're going to be cutting guys that are could have been on last year's roster but won't quite make the cut this year. So, yeah.
That's good. You like to see that, honestly. Oh, yeah.
It's a good problem to have.
Exactly. D'Lo, with these young receivers, specifically Foster, Sills, McLeod, you brought up McKenzie. Just who do you see out of that group? Who has impressed you thus far and I also disappointed you? And who do you see emerging as the one or maybe two who could sneak onto the roster there?
I mean, right now I think you can't understate how important it is to have a slot receiver be so strong to create mismatches like Beasley. So Beasley's probably like my guy just for 4 days. He's looking really good. I'm impressed with him. I'm trying to, I'm looking at the rest of this wide receiver core, like McKenzie, Williams, Sills, Phillips, McLeod, Easley, Bolden. And I'm trying to think who would be able to sneak on. And this is going to be a really tough group. And I think it's going to come down to, it's going to be kind of a cop-out answer. I apologize to our audience. But it's going to be, what is the one thing that Daboll is looking for that might be a deficiency on the roster? Is it going to be, he wants a big receiver? And if Duke Williams can show up and provide that, he'll kind of take that role. If it's somebody who's kind of a multifaceted, kind of scat back type of guy that they want to have somebody else back there, it's going to be either McKenzie or McLeod. So I think the next, you know, when we talk about four games being too long for the preseason, I think it's going to be four games to kind of sift out, are the Bills going to end up with six wide receivers? Because ultimately that's what it's going to come down to.
Yeah, With Williams, that's another guy who we really haven't heard about. But again, his game is more physical, I guess. Nick Wotan and Bradley Gelber have tweeted about this in the past few days. His game is more physical in particular. So when they get going with the pads and when they're playing full speed football, I would expect Duke Williams to take a jump and to start impressing more. But when you're just kind of no pads, just running routes, you're not really... That's not his game. He's not a flashy player. But once they're playing actual football, I think he'll start to make an impact. But I still don't know if he's a lock for the roster.
Yeah, I don't know if any of those guys are.
Yeah.
Have the ability to kind of crack the roster. But I think it's going to be interesting. I think another curveball could be, is there somebody out of the top five that might fall out? I mean, I don't think Brown, Beasley, or Jones, Foster, Roberts are going anywhere. But could there be a possibility that one of them do? Somehow.
I mean, you've seen the Bills. They're not afraid to make trades. I mean, who's to say that Zay Jones doesn't draw the interest of another team and Bills decide to move on, pick up some draft picks for the next season or two, you know? I'm not sure what you're going to really get back for him at this point, but there's definitely a possibility that someone in the top five could drop out or be moved.
Yeah, I've seen a few tweets already about, oh, Robert Foster, he's not safe. Don't overreact. Yeah. Don't please do not overreact to 4 days of training camp, which is kind of what we're doing on this podcast. But do not overreact and say the receiver, maybe the one receiver, if you wanted to pinpoint one receiver who really developed a rapport with Josh Allen last year, you would say Robert Foster because of his second half. Do not say that he is not a lock for the roster and he's a candidate to be cut after a few days of not showing up at or not playing well at training camp. Just wait. Yeah. Yes, he hasn't had the first team reps, but I mean, if they're playing Zay Jones and John Brown on the outside and Beasley in the slot, where's Foster going to play? Maybe they just want to see how that combination works, where they should put Zay Jones. That's been the thing about Zay Jones for years. Is he an outside guy or is he a big slot? I think he can be both. I think he's a nice little shifty piece that you can put wherever you want. But I don't think that Robert Foster not playing particularly well in the first 4 days of training camp says that he's in any danger of being cut. I don't think that's the case whatsoever.
I agree.
Thanks for that.
I will give you some feedback. I agree. It's 4 days.
Thank you. I do want to talk about David Sills, though, because some people have been disappointed about David Sills the fifth of his name, the Mountaineer, because he was incredibly productive. That's the word. Productive at West Virginia. He was good. He was very good. A lot of people were shocked when he didn't get drafted. You saw, if you watched Embedded, Brandon Bean said there were a few points during the draft where they considered taking him, and he just fell out of the draft somehow. That happens sometimes. Anthony Johnson, another guy that fell out of the draft this year. Tyree Jackson. Some outlets had Tyree Jackson as a day two pick. Now he's undrafted free agent, sticked in Buffalo. But with David Sills, I'm not surprised that he's not making the impact. A lot of people are saying he's a more sticked in Buffalo. There we go. He's stuck in Buffalo. There we go, D-Lo. Thank you. Again, you guys can't see the chat, but it's D-Lo's English teacher nature coming out, so thank you for that. But with David Sills, he was productive at West Virginia, but we've said it on a past episode of the Variety Hour. Will Greer is an incredibly different type of quarterback from Josh Allen and even Matt Barkley. Josh Allen, he can throw the ball the entire length of the field if he wanted to. He really could. But accuracy, I think it's an overblown, an overrated narrative, but that's not his strong point. He could use work when it comes to accuracy. Will Greer, accuracy is his game. He can put the ball anywhere. He doesn't have the strongest arm. He's not going to throw the ball 60, 70 yards down the field, but he's a pinpoint guy. He can thread the needle. So I think with David Sills, he hasn't had that long to, I guess, adapt to Allen's game, to adapt to the more, I have to have a larger catch radius and be used to catching a ball that's coming at me 100 miles per hour. So that's just, like I said, I'm not surprised that David Sills isn't jumping off the paper yet. But once they get in full pads and once he develops a better rapport with Allen, I could see him making more noise and becoming a more realistic candidate to make the 53-man roster. Rich, what do you think of that?
I honestly agree. I think that David Sills, his production at West Virginia, sure, it was with Will Greer. It was a little, I mean, who knows how that's going to translate to the NFL, but it is a guy that the Bills and Bean had on their board. They wanted to draft him, and they didn't end up getting him. Thankfully, they got him, as an undrafted free agent in that scramble after the draft. But it's going to be interesting to see if he can kind of wedge himself in there in the offense, or maybe in a special teams role where they almost have to keep him on the roster. You've seen guys do that before, where they force themselves on the roster into a spot, whether it be special teams or on the offense. I think that he possesses the skills and really the body that you kind of want of someone that could be a safety blanket type person across the middle. But it'd be interesting to see what he does. Maybe he slides into a spot if they move on from Zay Jones, or Zay Jones falls off, injured, whatever. He is a capable body to replace that.
And plus, we never know if somebody's going to get hurt. I mean, it's nice to see that we actually have some depth, and we're talking about, you know, our four and fives being guys who could be much more productive than previous seasons. So
that's a nice conversation.
It's a beautiful conversation because it used to be 1-2, and then who is even 1 or 2? We've spent years talking about Kelvin Benjamin and his catch radius in 99th percentile, whatever catch radius.
Oh, gosh,
and he ran the 40 in what, like 7 seconds? So, I mean, it's nice to actually be able to look at some depth if somebody were to fall off or somebody were to get injured or if they wanted to modify their game plan, much like the New England Patriots do, and emphasize certain aspects of the offense or certain players and feature certain guys. They could do that and mix and match much more so this year than they've had in the past.
Very true. It is nice to have depth, and we're just going to roll past the rest of the wide receiver position quickly.
There's a lot of them.
There's a lot. Ray McLeod, again, it's nice to see that he's taking a step. I still don't necessarily see him making the 53-man roster. Just because last year he wasn't reliable on punt returns and kick returns, and he was a non-factor in the offense. So maybe you see him take a bigger step this year, but I don't necessarily think so. I think I would still favor Isaiah McKenzie over Ray McLeod, even with this decent 4 days Ray McLeod has strung together here. So any last thoughts on receiver before we move forward here?
It's a good problem to have.
It's a good problem to have. Very true. So now we will move to the offensive line, where we will quickly talk about a storyline that has benefited both players, I want to say. It's the Cody Ford versus Trent Murphy matchup on the right side. Cody Ford, the rookie second-round pick out of Oklahoma, has been entrenched as the starting right tackle thus far. I think all 4 days he's been the starting right tackle. Brian Daboll said they're not sure if they'll ever consider shifting him into guard, but thus far he's been the starting right tackle, which is what Brandon Bean said he was going to be when he drafted him. So it's nice to see that Ford has lived up to the hype, I guess, in that sense, that he came in as the starting right tackle as a rookie, and he's held on to the job through 4 days again, but it's nice to see that they haven't bumped him down after a few days. And apparently he's had a few very good days against Trent Murphy, and also Trent Murphy has had a few good practices against Cody Ford, which is good to see, especially after Trent Murphy's, I'll say it, awful debut year in Buffalo. He was injured for, yes, he was injured for a lot of it. He didn't play for a lot of it, but when he was on the field, he had no explosiveness. He was just a non-factor. I don't want to say a liability, but he certainly wasn't helping the Bills. So it's good to see that, again, 4 days into training camp, that both he and Cody Ford are making the most of this battle and are almost making each other look good. Bueller?
What?
I mean, he couldn't have said it better. I don't know how to say it better.
Thank you so much.
It's nice to have that battle where you have that competition on opposite sides of the ball where you're pushing each other to get better. You want that in training camp. You don't want fights. You don't want scruffles. You don't want injuries. You want pushing each other to, you know, make the team as a whole better. And you see Trent Murphy and Cody Ford essentially exchanging blows. That's huge. That's great for getting yourself better and getting the team better. I think it's fantastic. I'm really, really hoping that the Bills and Trent Murphy are able to kind of have a good year this year, because if not, it's going to make that contract look even worse on Bean's record, and that's not good.
They do have an out after this year, so if Trent Murphy has another year like he had last year, that is the prime cut candidate, I would say.
I just hope he does produce, because if we're moving on from Shaq Lawson next year, and if Murphy doesn't produce, then you're creating another hole on the roster.
Yeah.
Although they have filled, I mean, they have filled
Daryl Johnson.
Here we go. They've filled a lot of, you know, holes on the roster, but I think we're still, you know, if we end up losing out at left end next year, I think that would be a struggle to kind of, you know, you just don't want that to be a hole. I don't know why I can't put it together right now, but you just don't want...
No, you're right.
I don't want somebody opposite Jerry Hughes in his last year to be somebody who's, you know, maybe inexperienced, or somebody where we're kind of stretching to find somebody who can, you know, take away some of the pressure from Jerry Hughes. So hopefully Murphy lives up to his billing.
Right, and on a team like Buffalo that so often stresses the importance of being tough in the trenches and being strong up front. You don't want that lack of depth at either end position or at any position across the defensive line or the offensive line for that matter. So it's nice to see that Trent Murphy, I don't know how many times I'm going to say it on this podcast, but after 4 days, he's looking like he's finally back at full health, which I think McDermott and Bean said a few weeks ago that, yeah, he's actually back at full health now. So that's good to see.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, hey, Kyle.
Fingers crossed. Yeah,
knock on wood here.
Guess who else plays defensive end?
Daryl Johnson does.
Jadeveon Clowney.
Oh, he does.
Who's that?
Jadeveon Clowney. Are you asking me to transition?
I was just throwing it out there because I thought it was really nice and natural based on
it
our
was
outline.
A nice transition. I'm quickly looking to see if there's any other big storylines from training camp. I'll just quickly go over a few. Trey White's been good, which is, you know, you expect
shocker,
that. Yes. Yeah, Trey White's been very good for 2 years. I would expect him to be good in training camp. TJ Yeldon really hasn't been being used. Doesn't look good for me. A few weeks ago, I said he's a damn near lock to make the roster. And he hasn't been used that much. Devin Singletary today, though, did get first team reps, which wow. is, or today, we're recording this Sunday, which is, I very much like Devin Singletary. I remember watching Devin Singletary's tape for the first time, and I thought to myself, he looks like a little Shady. Shady himself isn't that tall.
He's a smaller Shady.
Exactly. I think, Rich, you described him as this a few weeks ago. Devin Singletary is kind of LeSean McCoy with Fred Jackson's lower half.
Yeah,
or like Fred
exactly.
Jackson's hips.
He's got the shifty hips. He's got, yeah. But he's got that Shady speed and that Shady kind of vision where you sneak through or gets through the line of scrimmage so quick. You're like,
oh, exactly.
How did he get there? Like, it's insane.
Cut on a explosive. Dime. Yeah, very good in open field. Devin Singletary, I don't know if this is the year where he will get the experience, he will get the reps to prove that he is a good running back, but give him the opportunity and Devin Singletary will be a very good running back. Mm-hmm. They had a good draft last year, I'll say. The Bills had a very good draft last year with Oliver and Singletary. That's two potential anchors on the defensive and offensive side of the ball, and they got Singletary in round three, which
and
is...
And Ford, so then you have
and Ford,
three...
Yeah.
And Ford, look at you. Guys, we're working together here.
And possibly Dawson Knox being your starter in week one at tight end if he's healthy.
And
that's another thing, yeah.
We're only 4 days.
What a friggin' draft.
And we're only 4 days in.
We're only 4 days in. We got four
starters.
So take
starters. That as what you will.
All right, so yeah, Dawson Knox. I'll talk about Dawson Knox a little bit more later, but we'll transition here past training camp. Again, we're 4 days in, but they've looked good. Josh Allen's good. John Brown, good. Cole Beasley, good. Ed Oliver, good. Robert Foster, bad right now, but still good. It's very broken English, but there we go. And Cody Ford is
football,
good. Trent
good.
Murphy's good. Football, good. Bills, good.
Me like.
Now, 10-6. we'll transition here. Jadeveon Clowney. We did a whole podcast a few weeks ago about the Bills potentially trading for Jadeveon Clowney. Mm. We came to the conclusion of it's just not realistic at this point. Mm-hmm. They really don't have the money. They don't necessarily have the assets. And though it'd be nice to have a player like Clowney in Buffalo, it just didn't seem like a possibility. And that's what we thought until last week when Matt Hammond, a reporter out of Houston, after the Bills rehired Brian Gain, the former Texans GM, who was with the Bills in some role in 2017, rehired him in an advisory role for this season. Matt Hammond tweeted that he would not be surprised. He said, don't be surprised if Clowney ends up getting traded to Buffalo because the breadcrumbs are there. There is, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And this seems like if Clowney might get traded, there are, I guess, reasons why it could be to Buffalo. But then ESPN's Marcel-Louis Jacques, with his first big story as a Bills reporter, said a trade to Buffalo for Clowney is not likely at this time. He said the NFL landscape is fluid, but at this point in time, it does not seem likely. So, guys, there were a few days there where Clowney mania was running wild in Buffalo, but it doesn't seem, according to Marcel-Louis Jacques, it doesn't seem like it's going to happen at this point. So, Rich, you were very adamant in our exclusive premium Slack chat. The last few days about it's not going to happen. There's even when Matt Hammond tweeted that it could, you said no, it's no way this happens. So Rich, now standing where we are now, what's your opinion on Clowney? Does it happen, and why not?
I still don't think it happens. I don't think that. I mean, yeah, you can have breadcrumbs there. You can have. You're almost. They're making connections that aren't really there. I just don't see that this happening. Also, this late in the summer, where you have the season right around the corner, we've seen trades with Bean before, but it's kind of unlikely that it just doesn't make sense. It really doesn't, and it'd be great to have him, but I don't think the Bills are gonna be doing that. They're so focused on this year and what they can do with it. Already their hands are full pretty much with the pieces they have right now and the young people they've drafted. I don't think they're gonna add that contract to the books. They'd like to see what these guys have first.
And that's another thing Bean has talked about so often in his few years as GM here. He wants to pay his own. He hasn't had the opportunity to pay his own yet because he's had two drafts here. If you want to count the McDermott-led draft, then he's had three drafts here, or three drafts of the Bean McDermott regime era. And he stressed the importance of keeping enough money to pay his own. If he acquires Clowney and gives him money, they might have money to pay Trey White down the road. They might have money to pay Ed Oliver down the road. They might have money to pay Josh Allen down the road, or Zay Jones, or Devin Singletary, or Dawson Knox, or Cody Ford, or Deion Dawkins. But they've drafted a very good young core here. And if you acquire Clowney and pay him his money that he wants, yeah, you're very much improving the roster for this year. But I think long-term, you may be putting yourself in an undesirable cap situation, perhaps similar to the one that Bean inherited, where he can't pay his own, and he has to let the players that he has seen and he has put in the right situation to develop into very good young players, just let them walk a few years from now, which is something that Brandon Bean will not do. So, D'Lo, any last thoughts here on Clowney?
That all sounds good. I mean, looking at
Thank you. 2020,
they only have about $51 million in cap space according to SpotTrack right now. So they're going to want to pay their own, and they're not going to need to spend however whatever. What are they going to give them, like $15 million a year, $20 million,
something like that? Yeah.
Some kind of cap space,
something crazy.
So yeah, it's going to be something crazy that they just don't have. So. Go buy your 90 jersey for the Houston Texans.
Yeah. I really, this might be a bold take, but I don't think Brandon Bean will ever trade a future first round pick. He values draft picks too much to just trade a future first.
It really has to be someone that you really, really want to,
like a Clowney?
No, maybe someone on the offensive side of the ball to put your team to that next level. I think you add that, but the defense is already, I mean, they finished, what, third in the league last year? You add Clowney.
Second
in the league last year in total yards, yeah. You add Clowney, you're going to be first, but there's other needs, and there's other people out there right now. I just don't think that, it just doesn't seem like it would make sense.
All right, guys, good conversations here, but before we go, I want to debut a little segment here, a little training camp exclusive segment. It's called Buffalo Fight Night. The best part of training camp is the scuffles. Everyone loves to hear about the training camp scuffles. So, and we've had a couple thus far in Bills camp on the last few days. Again, we're recording this on Sunday, so if something big goes down on Monday, we're not going to be able to talk about it until next week. But what I'm going to do now is I'm going to tell you guys the scuffles that have happened thus far, and then you tell me who would win in the octagon in a sanctioned MMA match.
Woo.
Who would win? All right, first off, we have Dawson Knox versus Micah Hyde. Rich, who's winning that one?
Micah Hyde's going to kick his butt. Hyde, you've seen, I mean, for anyone that watched Bills Embedded, you see how cut Micah Hyde is and how...
Oh, true.
How he, you know, for not to sound cliche, he treats his body like a temple. I don't think a young Dawson Knox is going to survive a round in the octagon with Micah Hyde.
Ooh, wow. D'Lo.
I don't see it.
I'll go Hyde. I always go the defensive player.
I agree.
100%. I want to see the guy who's, you know, delivering the hit.
We're going to edit that out, but yeah, Micah Hyde wins that. I think he wins that unanimous decision, if not by knockout, as Rich said. Yeah, Micah Hyde's winning that fight. But now we got the main event. We got the fight that you put on the posters, that you put in the commercials. It's LeSean McCoy versus Tremaine Edmonds. That is a fight that I would pay good money to see. D'Lo, who's winning that?
Oh, Edmonds.
Yes.
Edmonds, he's like, what, 6 inches taller? Yeah. 40 pounds heavier? He plays middle linebacker? Yeah. He's 10 years younger?
Dude, that'd be a good fight still. if
they were closer in size, I'd say McCoy maybe, just because he's...
I guess we're editing that one out, too.
I see Edmonds winning that fight, honestly. He's a bigger guy.
I'm just going to bleep those. I'm going to bleep that all out.
It's going to be a long just...
I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, it's just going to be us reacting.
That's how it's going to... Yeah, I think that would be...
D'Lo and I saying, oh, no, oh, no.
I mean, it happened.
But, yeah, Tremaine Edmonds is just so weird because
on that note,
he's 6'5". He is just a zooted individual. He's just huge. He's built, right? But he has a baby face. He has such a baby face, but I don't care. He's winning that fight. Tremaine Edmonds is winning that fight 10 times out of 10. So, that's your first edition of Buffalo Fight Night, and it was a doozy. We got Micah Hyde. We got a veteran winning, but then we have Tremaine Edmonds, the leader of the defense, knocking out McCoy in round one. Absolutely. So I think that's enough for us.
Yeah.
One of you said we're going to go 56 minutes, and that's exactly what we went. So, we'll get out of here. D'Lo, where can people find you on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter at JDeLoro, JDiLoro, and just love the social media.
Nice, Rich.
You can find me on Twitter at by Rich Kowalski.
You can find me on Twitter at Kyle Salegi. You can find Bills Wire on Twitter at The Bills Wire, on Facebook at The Bills Wire, on Instagram at The Bills Wire. One of those was wrong. I'm sorry. Make sure you figure it out. That's the fun. But make sure you read the Bills Wire articles. Make sure you listen to the Bills Wire podcasts. Everything's great. Everything's wonderful. So thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys again next week. Bye.